Welcome to episode 7 of The Effortless Athlete. I'm Alex Castlander here with Bobby White. We're the guys at High Power Performance. On today's episode, we have the director of training at Varsity House Sports and partner in business of strength, Adam Menner. Adam has worked with thousands of athletes over the years, from Gen Pop and novices to ESPN top 100s and world-class professionals. He specializes mostly in the world of basketball performance, so he's a guy we were really excited to get on the show. On today's episode, we talk about what it means to take a truly global approach when assessing athletes and managing their stress, Adam's ideal 2-to-1 ratio for mitigating injury and maximizing performance, and as we've discussed on nearly every episode so far, how to create a culture that your athletes will succeed in. This is a really great episode for any trainers and coaches, as Adam shares some of the principles on which he's really grown his business. He breaks down his testing methods and the 13-week block cycle he uses at Varsity House and shares advice for helping athletes transfer their training to the quarter field. We briefly touch on his business of strength consulting company, but if you want more information on that, you can find the website link at the bottom of these show notes. So without further ado, here's Adam Menner.
Adam, welcome to the show. We're not real good with intros or anything like that. We kind of just start talking and we try to keep it as conversational as possible. With that being said, if you can just, we might be up to 7 or 8 listeners now. I think last episode it was 4 or 5, but we're getting up there now in a number of listeners. But if you could just do a quick introduction, what got you into the industry and where are you now?
Yeah, for sure. No, I think it's cool. I think podcasts are the main form of communication right now. So, it's going to grow for sure. So my name is Adam Menner. I'm the director of training and education here at Varsity House. And then I'm also the partner in Business of Strength, where we just help a lot of other coaches, gym owners and trainers kind of build successful careers and businesses. And what's funny is most people don't know is I actually started at Joe DeFranco's. So this was like almost 10 years ago now. And so I walked in there. Cam Joss was a really good buddy of mine. I connected with him and I did a informal internship, if you will, underneath him. And then that's kind of how it all started. So I was really fortunate. My first exposure to just working with athletes was at a super high level. I was seeing guys like Brian Cushing, Triple H, kind of just come in the door all the time. And I was like, oh, wow, this is what it's like. One thing, though, that I think that I didn't get early exposure to, which I had to reteach myself or kind of regain experience here is the true athlete, right? I mean, 9 out of 10 athletes that you work with are probably not going to be high level pros. They're going to be good. They're going to be athletic, but they require a whole different scope of training than a high level pro, because you're trying to raise, let's just say that genetic ceiling or floor, if you will, of those younger athletes who don't have as much exposure. But we all know if LeBron James was to walk in our doors here, I mean, there's not a lot you're doing with him that's going to improve, his ceiling. It's going to be like, hey, I literally be like, what music do you like? Here are some things I feel like you could do based off of, a simple assessment. And let's just kind of continue on and train as usual. But that lower tier of guys is where you really make a difference. And so when I came here to Varsity House, yes, we had high level pros. Yeah, we have a lot of high level basketball players that I work with here. But the majority of the kids that we work with, it's really, really cool to see them go from, maybe 6th man, 7th man on their team to becoming a starter after 4 years and getting a D2, D3 scholarship, which is pretty fun to see. So,
yeah, no, I love that you're into that, whether it's a high level, low level, mid level athlete. Like one of my kids got cut. He was a junior, right? And he got cut last year. He was a junior and he got cut from his team. And I couldn't believe he got cut. I mean, 6'5", athletic. I'm not saying he's a superstar or anything like that, but he got cut and it like broke my heart. This year and he kept training, right? And this year as a senior, he made the team, right? And I didn't think he would, because I mean, if you're getting cut as a junior, you got to really impress the coach the next year not to get cut. But like, that was a win that I would put, like, for me, I was more proud of that you know, just a kid making his team after getting cut his junior year was as big as me. You know, I've got guys with Division I scholarships and all that. And I don't think, you know, one is more important, because for him, you know, that's the show, right? 100%. That was what he was pushing for. That was his goal. And that's as big to him as the NBA may be for, you know, somebody like grown up like LeBron James. Right. And it's awesome to take part in that. And I glad you kind of brought that up. With one of the most, you know, we've gone back and forth quite a bit. I've met with you and been in your facility. I'm amazed at the amount of data you collect on your athletes and the amount of, you know, research you do and case studies you start to present. Can you go into that a little bit? I know you do it with all your athletes, but if you can kind of hone in on the basketball side and what you've seen from their practice schedule about load management and stress and all that type of stuff, and just any of the data you want to talk about with your basketball players.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it starts here though, right? And this is just like, this is my take on it. I think as us, you know, as strength and conditioning professionals, sports performance coaches, even skills coaches, I put in this category, you know, but you guys do both. So it's like you encompass it all. Is we're not viewed as healthcare professionals. It's literally like an option. You know what I mean? Like, this is a global issue. Like, let's say, like, okay, I have a patient, they come in. If I'm a doctor, it's like, I'm just going to write you medicine. I'm going to say, oh no, you have hypertension. You have all these symptoms. Here's your prescription. You're going to go take this and you're going to feel better in 3 weeks. Very seldom, you know, working with thousands of athletes, do you get prescribed like, hey, you know what's actually really good for you? Exercising and training. It's like, that's the least thing that they recommend. And I say that to say that there's no union in strength and conditioning. There's no hierarchy in strength and conditioning. The barrier to entry is extremely low. I mean, so low that like all three of us, we could go get like a weekend certification in ACE and have six packs and start posting pictures and like we're professionals. And the advice that
I would argue we don't even need that certification.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's even worse. But like, so, and then we can start giving advice, buy my nutrition program, buy this program, do this program, all these things. And let's say you have a big following, right? And people follow us. That advice could literally harm somebody for the rest of their life. Imagine like you told them, like, I'm just making something up. Imagine you told them that like squatting to depth was really good and eating like peanut protein was good, but they didn't know they had a peanut allergy and they didn't know they have some type of hip impingement. So you screw up their low back and then you just gave them an allergic reaction.
So this is the reason I'm going to cut you off quick. This is the reason I stopped doing like exercise breakdowns. And I do a lot of the strength training with my athletes, but I don't post it often because I don't know who's watching my videos. Right. So now you'll see, I just generally write good drill period. Yeah. Right? Because I don't know if it's a good, like, you know, it's just for me, it's funny. I don't know if it's funny for anybody else, but I got tired of doing all these lengthy descriptions and I don't know who's watching it. It might not be what you should be doing, or I'm doing a French contrast, you know, going through triphasic, or our friend Jake Torres, I've heard you like, these kids probably shouldn't be doing that. So I've really cut out a lot of that stuff because I, you know, I'm trying to not hurt anybody or not put out stuff that, you know, they think they need to do and they don't.
100%. And so with that, here at Varsity House, I think that because the barrier to entry is so low, and because, yes, you can read a lot of books, right? Like you could read Franz Bosch, you could read anything, you could read all these different methods, and they all work in some capacity because everything works, right? When implemented correctly. But I think that what's really important, at least to us and our team, is you have to show me that it works in terms of, it has to be quantifiable in some aspect. You could be like, did you know that like X, Y, and Z helps this, 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 and you say it's like a blanket statement. It's like, well, show me that it works. And so our data collection is pretty extensive on two fronts, right? And I think this is where we're unique. We have what's called psychological data. And so we literally collect things like, what's your favorite music? What movies do you like? All these different things. When's your birthday? All these little things that play into how we can build an awesome experience and kind of remove that stress barrier for these kids so they have the best time and the best experience. And it goes down the list. Number two is all the data that we have, such as like stress management. So for a lot of the basketball players, I record how many games they're playing in, how many skill sessions do you participate in? What other extracurricular activities do you have? And then we get into our training. And what I found is the ratio is ridiculous. So I had a female, I won't name her name. She's a high-level basketball player, went on to play at a really good school in the Big Ten. She was playing in 105 plus games a year. She was participating in 300 plus skill sessions, and she was only doing 2 strength training sessions a week. So she had 102 strength training sessions. That's a 4-to-1 ratio. And so there was a chance of injury there. And so mitigating and understanding how
to was this prior to you or with you?
Prior to me, yeah.
And was she presenting knee pain, back pain, anything?
She was just, yeah, she wasn't performing to the best of her capability. She was a freshman. And when her parents reached out, they were like, hey, like, these are some things that I feel like she needs to work on. She says her low back hurts her a lot. She says she feels like she's losing a step in her acceleration and little things like that. And here's what most people would do, right?
Put her on the Vertimax.
Like, yeah. Or they'd be like, hey, let's do the super assessment. Like, did you know that you actually have left AIC? And because X, Y, and Z, this, that, and the other. And it's like, no, she plays in 500 games.
Right.
Oh. You know, so that's one aspect of it. Then, yes, we do use a lot of data in terms of like speed, vertical jump and force velocity profiles. And we do have some movement stuff, because if you keep peeling away the layers, meaning if I see like maybe they're not playing in a lot of games, like I have some pro players we're working with right now, they're not playing in a lot of games. So then when you keep, okay, they pass that. Then if I do a movement assessment with them, oh, maybe these things are showing up a little bit. That could be contributing to that. But I think when you step back and you take a global approach to these individuals, you begin to see a clearer picture versus looking subjectively at your biases and being like, well, I believe in FRC or I believe in PRI. So that's why, well, that's what's wrong with you. It's like, no. Like, take a step back. Let's see the whole picture. And then we can kind of identify from there.
Right. And you know, again, you start chasing symptoms. You can go down a rabbit hole and you end up doing a lot of nothing.
Sure.
And from my experience, and when I was a young trainer, that's what I did. Kid came in with, you know, low back pain or like some knee discomfort. And I got to figure this out. And I might've spent, you know, I don't know how many sessions trying to figure out what was going on with his knee and not even, and this is me as a, you know, 25-year-old, I'm going to say kid, maybe this guy just needed to get, maybe he was getting 4 hours of sleep and I didn't ask him that. Right.
100%.
Maybe he was working out 7 times a day and I didn't ask him that. Right. And it's so important that we do that. And it's awesome that you record it. What other findings have you found? Right. Can you answer that for me?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of like correlations between like kids who are playing in excess volume and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a ratio. So you can't exceed a 2-to-1 ratio, meaning like if you're playing in 100 games in a year, you need at least 50 strength training sessions. Or they don't even have to be strength training, like where you're coming in and doing whatever. At least you have to do something like something that we prescribe you. So that could just be like some rehab work. That could just be like isometric work. That could just be like tendon work, band work, whatever. But just something to mitigate what's happening while you're playing. And this is what got crazy, is when you start to exceed that threshold. So like once you start to exceed that 3-to-1, 4-to-1, all of their numbers began to decrease. And here's kind of how we do it. We have 5 categories of like improvement, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but like a strength, we have a speed, we have a vertical, and then we have a like a conditioning one. And each of that gets a numerical value of improvement from a block. So let's say you improved by 4% on the strength, 2% on the speed, 7% on the vert, 2% on the conditioning. I add that up, divide by 4, that's your total improvement over that block. So let's say you got better by 7%. So your individual score, it's like, hey, I improved by 7% holistically as an athlete this block. Perfect. But once you began to exceed that threshold of that 2-to-1, what ended up happening was those numbers decreased a lot, meaning they almost got worse. And here's something that people don't think about, is even in season, you're like, well, they're training, they're doing all this stuff. Playing your sport typically is almost sub max of what like real hard training is. Right. If you were to look at like an athlete outside of maybe like a collision sport like football, but no basketball player is doing 100% all out sprints. Does that make sense?
Right.
Like they're not going like all out. Their jumps are sub max. You couldn't. So in season is a great time to maintain some type of high intensity work. So that could be like a max effort sprint. That could be going a little bit harder on a strength training exercise. Like let's say you're doing like a single leg variation or even like a safe hex bar deadlift. If you are like, no, we got to be really careful around here, like this and the other. You're just contributing to their submax volume that's going to push them over that threshold versus like, hey, we're going to go for a top set of three, but you're not going to exceed a 6 or 7 on a scale of 1 to 10. Tell me how that feels, giving them the power. Then they're still getting some type of output that's going to help them maintain that strength and become resilient throughout the season. And like I said, when we found that they exceeded that number and they weren't doing their strength training, they would literally go from like 7% improvement to like -1%, -2.5%, I remember was a number I saw. So it was almost like, hey, like you're getting worse here and there's a better case of injury, or I should say more probable case of injury because of how much volume you're accumulating. We need to dial that back before we even take into consideration anything else. So,
Adam, what kind of conversations do you have with your players' coaches and their parents to kind of convince them? You know, obviously you have the numbers that you can always show them, but what advice would you have for any trainer or any athlete out there who's maybe on the same wavelength as you and as us, but can't seem to convince their coach that this is what they need during season?
Yeah, 100%. I think it all comes down to just aligning with the emotional side of it, meaning like I never even present numbers. Like if they really start asking questions, as you guys see, like they're not really going to start peeling back the layers until they like, unless you have like a dad who's like a nerd or he says he used to like train, right? He's like, yeah, well, I went to Alabama. So like, show me this. It's like, no, they usually don't care. Mm-hmm. But it's like, hey, like, listen, I know you want your son or daughter to play in college. I know you want them to play long-term. My job is to help ensure that that happens. I think the best course of action for that is just to make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of managing their volume, managing their intensity in terms of what they do, just so they don't get hurt, because we don't want that to happen for, you know, little Billy or little Susie or something like that. And, you know, that's really important. If you come out the other end and you're like, well, we're the best because we have all the numbers, as like a human being, I'm just like, okay, dude, like, you know what I mean? Like you come off as like, oh, a know-it-all. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, like we're actually trying to work on the same page here. We want to try to get your son, daughter to that next level. Here's how I think we could do it together.
I find it unbelievable. Like, I don't know if it's a high school coach thing or a coach thing in general, I can count on one hand the amount of coaches that have reached out to me about what I'm doing with their players. And I've reached out to coaches all the time, but I rarely have a high school coach reach out to me and say, hey, I'm just trying to get on the same page. I know you train a lot of players in the state. What are you doing with them? What can I do to help? I mean, why? I do it all the time. I reach out to other trainers. If I know I have a kid that's working out with you, I want to be on the same page. If you're going to handle the strength stuff, and let's say I'm doing the skill stuff, I want to make sure that we are on the same page. Again, I'm not trying to compete with anybody. I truly have the best interest of my athletes in my mind at all times. Right. And if I think maybe somebody lives an hour from me, right, I want to be able to communicate to a trainer out there and say, hey, I got him in once. This is what I saw. Or if he's going back and forth. And I can't believe how these coaches never reach out to me and say, hey, what are you doing? Why are you doing this crazy job? Or whatever. Well, can we get on the same page? Can we learn? And it doesn't happen.
No. And they think too, like, and again, you can't say everybody, but we'll say a majority.
Right.
They think that like what they're doing is the best because of like their preconceived like biases. And it's just the truth. It's like, I'm their coach. We had a winning season last year. This is what we did. This is what's best.
Right.
Versus like, or like, here's another example. Sometimes they have like in-house strength coaches. Let's say there's like private schools that we work with. We won't name names, but like high level private schools with some of the best kids in the country we're talking about. They usually have like internal strength coaches, or at least somebody that works with them in some capacity. The thing is with them is that like they don't even think to consider, excuse me, what's happening like outside of the gym. It's just like in this bubble that they have and these walls that they created, this is what works. This is what's best. When in reality, it's like, no, like we're also trying to help. So just let us know, you know, just keep us in the loop. And therefore we can kind of make sure that everybody's on the same page here, like you said.
Yeah. It takes not having an ego. 100%. And I, not that I don't have one, but I continually try to kill it. Right. Anytime I start, or anytime I'm on the side of the majority, or anytime I think I know what I'm talking about, I have to pause and I have to reflect. Cause I you go through stages. Like I go through these periods of time where I think when I came to your gym during the summer, dude, I was in it, but I knew I had like, I going through these periods where I'm going, I'm learning and I get in these grooves and it's like, wait, I need to pause. What am I doing? Right. Is what I'm doing. Right.
Right.
Who can I talk to? And that's why having relationships with guys like you is so important because, you know, sometimes I think I'm onto something and, you know, it makes sense to me, but again, I could be, you know, my vision could be blurred. I could be over-focused on one thing and not another. And it's kind of why I think I wanted to start this podcast. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to get this going and I want it to be perfect. And now I just want to reach out to as many coaches as I can, have conversations with guys like you that I believe are on the same page and really pushing the industry in a better direction where we're not afraid to talk about each other or, you know, talk to each other.
For sure.
And, yeah.
And it's also too, you know, when I look at that, it's more so like you said, yeah, like humbling yourself, but it's also something bigger in terms of like true growth as like a human, as a coach. Like if you can't take that step personally, you're never going to achieve where you want to be anyway. You know what I mean? Like I forget where I read it, but it's like consistently trying to prove yourself wrong is what's really going to lead to the outcomes that you're looking for all the time. Cause it's like you said, yeah, like you could be so in your head about something and think that that works. And that's kind of a novelty approach. Like I see that with our coaching staff sometimes. Like I'll just give an example. Like I'm not going to use what happened, but I'll use in the context of it. Like they might go to a seminar, right? Let's say you go to like a PRI is a popular topic right now. Let's say you go to a PRI seminar. I think PRI is great. We implement principles of it. Doesn't encompass everything we do, but I think it's great. But because that's your confirmation bias and you believe so heavily that that is right, then you go back and you only implement that stuff and everybody has to do it. And it's like, this is, I think is really cool. This is the way. But then what happens is you actually begin to lose interest in what's best for the people who are right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And that is where the key lies. It's like, it's not the number one thing. There's like a quote. It's like, it's not what I think. It's what's best for this person and how can I meet them and how can I meet their needs, you know, on that front.
Yeah. And that brings it back. We had Jake Tora on a couple episodes and it, you know, what you are is what you see. You know, if you're a strength coach, you see strength. Yeah. You know, if you're a PT, you see dysfunction. If you're a PRI guy, you know, you see PRI stuff. If you're an FFS guy, you know, you're trying to get a 21 or whatever it is. And I think to kind of bring this all back full circle, the idea of measuring, right, and it takes guts because you're putting your product, you know, you're testing, you know, the validity of what you're doing. And I don't think a lot of people have the guts to do it. I think people, like, if they actually got a jump mat, got force plates, got some type, whatever system you want, I don't care, FRC, PRI, FM, whatever, right? Testing, vertical jump, broad jump, whatever. If they really started to do that, they might see that what they're doing is wrong, right?
100%. And I couldn't agree
think
more.
People are scared. Yeah, I think the normal trainer, the normal gym, the normal person is scared to put themselves to the test. And I think one of the best quotes I ever heard was by Greg Cook. You know, you measure what you care about. You measure, you know, if you don't care about it, you won't measure it. And that's why, you know, again, that even brings me to why are we measuring what we're measuring? And I think that's a good segue to maybe next question for you. What do you measure and why do you measure it?
For sure. I think, you know, again, looking at holistically, there's certain things in training, in my opinion, and it's also, you know, backed by research and you can just see because all roads kind of lead to Rome in some facet. But there's certain non-negotiables in training, right? Like here's a perfect example. Who in this world is going to refute that if you lift weights, you're going to build muscle and get stronger?
Nobody.
Like, you can't. It's impossible, right? Another one that I believe in is speed, right? Who says that if you don't improve speed, other sub-qualities don't improve? It's irrefutable, meaning if I improve someone's acceleration and max velocity, they're going to get stronger. They're going to be able to cover ground in less time. All the subsequent things that I'll explain that we test, but those are irrefutable. I think where it gets a little hazy is where theories begin to take over. And like you see, like you said, like you only measure what you see or what you care about. Because it's like when you go back to all those different philosophies, like, yes, they work in some capacity, but for some other people, they don't. But like strength training across the board, right? Let's say like you were like, you and I were going to do a little case study. You were like, I'm going to do this super awesome conjugate slash hypertrophy crazy program and like this, that, and the other. And I was like, no, we're just going to neutral grip bench our basketball players for the next 12 weeks by just improving volume and intensity slowly over time. That outcome, just because of the consistency factor, progressive overload, adhering to the principles, is going to get you to where you want to be. But the other ones, because in theory and practice, they may sound good. Like I remember I read in Cal Dietz's book, Triphasic Training, that this works. But I remember isometrics work. So eccentrics work too, this, that, and the other. You're just almost like we're talking about. You're going down this theoretical rabbit hole where the other's just proven like, no, progressive overload over time elicits the best adaptation for strength and muscle. The end. Here's where I think people don't understand is that like, the consistency factor of that over time is what disinterests people. It's like skill work, right? Look at like, you know, we'll use skill work as an example. I don't teach skill work, but it's like, if you were to practice the same moves and certain drills that, you know, these players need all the time, and then you occasionally add in stuff, but it's that 500 makes a day over and over and over and over and over again is going to elicit that outcome. And so same thing with speed. If I can get an athlete who comes in our doors and runs 17 miles per hour and I raise their miles per hour to 22.5, they got better. End of story. But it's just that day in and day out of picking the right variables and sticking to the plan is where you're going to elicit those best outcomes over time. So to land the plane, I think the two things that we monitor are strength. We do a unilateral variation and a press variation. That's it. For our speed work, we have three different variations. We have an acceleration, which is a 15-yard split time. So we just measure that with like Fusion Sports or lasers. So like pretty high-end equipment. And then we have a 30-yard, because a basketball court's 94 feet, it comes out to like 32 yards. So we do 30 yards. And then it's just like, did you improve on your max velocity on that output? And then the last one we do is just like a vertical jump test. And that's just a standard on a force plate, 2 feet measuring total peak output. And those are what we call constants. So yes, we're going to have like a million different variations, but what we always test are those three things. Because then I can look back at a 13-week training block and be like, hey, look, when we implemented this here, we had a better total improvement in percent, you know, at the end of this block because of those three constants that we chose to improve upon. You can't keep, it's like taking a test, but keep like changing I'm trying to figure out how to say this. It's like moving the goalpost if you're constantly changing your test. You know what I mean? How can you validate your effort if the test that you're trying to test for is always changing? So it's like we have those constants. We've tested them for 5 years, and that's how we've kind of compiled our data on that front.
Have you developed standards and what you want to your athletes to achieve?
Exactly. And so what we do is then we organize them into different levels, high school, college, pro. We have what's called a least and then average and best. And then we compare those profiles to like what the NBA is, what the NCAA is. And so basically based off of those four standards, it's like, hey, you're in this percentile or you fall in that percentile. I think if we could improve you upon this, this is how we could get you to the next level. And something that we did, which was just fun, is like, I looked at the top over the last 10 years, we looked at the top 30 NBA drafts. So like in the first round, right? 60 picks. We looked at what their combine testing was and how well they did. And then that kind of just dictated our standard in terms of like, if you want to play pro, so like, let's say you're a player on the fence and, you know, we train a lot of those guys. So like maybe they go to like Arizona or somewhere like that. And like they play and like they could or could not get drafted. I know if that I help them get to that level, those standards, that it could improve their draft chances, because over the last 10 years, 30 players always hit these standards or these numbers. And so that's why I believe data kind of plays an important role, because it helps organize what you're seeing, if you will.
Were there anything you measured in particular had a higher correlation to getting, let's say, to the NBA or getting to the, like, progressing their level of that they compete at?
Yeah, for sure. Two of them was vert and the 30-yard sprint. They do a three-fourths court sprint, but that's a 30-yard sprint. Players who performed better on those two drills were more probable for getting drafted.
What was the vert? Was there a number? Was there like a cutoff?
Yeah, the way they do it, though, is weird. I don't like the way they test them.
They have an approach, NBA, right?
Yeah, it's the standard, and then they give you the option of a two-step approach, like a penultimate jump or whatever you want to call it, and then a single leg takeoff.
Yeah.
But what's crazy is they still use like a vert tech.
Yeah.
So like it's literally like, okay, take off, but that's so relative and so subjective, you know. But again, so we still use the vert tech. Like we have a force plate, but I'm gonna use or a G flight, we have both. But I still use the vert tech because it's like, look, get used to performing well on that test, because the higher you get, again, there's more on the line too, right? Like if you're dealing with a kid who has the potential to make millions of dollars, there's very little room for error that you want to make sure that you include. It's not like, yeah, I think we're going to do this because this is cool. This is cool. It's like, no, you have an agent calling like, hey man, how's he doing? How's he doing? How's he doing? There's very little chance, you know, that you want to leave up into the air. So we practice the test that you're going to perform at the NBA combine.
Yeah. I think with kids like that, I mean, again, I think the quality of training that I offer, you know, is great, but with you, those kids that are special, I want a place where they're safe. I don't want to mess them up. You know, I want to have a place where they
I'm talking go. About, yeah, we're talking about like the upper.
But even like the low level division, like those kids, you know, again, what's their training age? You know, they're phenomenal basketball players. They can shoot, they can jump, they can do all that. But in terms of weight room, in terms of strength, you know, what's their training age? How much have they actually done, and how complicated do we need to make it? Would you say you test a single leg variation?
Yeah, like
and
a single leg. Yeah. Like a single leg strength test. I can't even speak.
Yeah.
Single leg strength test. So like it could be with a dumbbell. It could be like a barbell reverse lunge or like a front rack reverse lunge, something like that, just to see their single leg strength. And then we have like a correlation for it, and then a press variation. So it could be a safe bench variation, a dumbbell bench variation. But here's what's important. Only when you get to a certain level do we really start caring about like those tests. Like our junior athletes, no. Even our low-level high school kids, no. It's mainly like our junior seniors and then our college and then our pro guys.
What would you say? I don't know what the percentage is of players I have that we can improve their vert, we can improve their, let's say it's a 30-yard sprint, we can improve their skill, we can do all that, but they can't carry it over to the game.
Yeah.
What do you do for those? You know, you have a kid that he put 6 inches on his vert, he put whatever, you know, 20 pounds on his frame, and he's just not playing any better.
For sure. I mean, I tell him good luck, and then we send him on his own. I'm kidding.
This isn't going to work out. Yeah. Go somewhere else.
Yeah, go somewhere else.
I wanted to say it.
Yeah, go try the Vertimax and the balancing on the Bosu ball.
Yeah, it's Bosu.
No, I'm sorry. yeah, I mean, so something that goes into speed development, though. You know, we have a day. So this is something that's kind of fun. We have this day on day three, because most kids train 3 days a week, like 4 or 5 is just getting a little crazy, in my opinion, just in terms of everything they're doing. So day three, we have like, you know, we still do our structured training. So it's kind of more like change of direction work, more live play, some reactive stuff. And it's fun. It's just gives them an environment to just do something different. The first 2 days are like, all right, we're going to do our weighted speed work. We're going to do our pressing. We're going to do the stuff you need. But day three is like wild. The music's off. We have the whole gym. I cleared the gym out. It's like, it's a lot of fun. And on this day, what's interesting is this is where you see that discrepancy that you're talking about, you know, the robots versus like the kids that just can ball out. Because if you were to do like a partner shadow drill into a sprint on a cadence, the kid that's like so good in the weight room or so good in technical, he doesn't have that variability. One, because he doesn't have exposure. Like a lot of these kids that go on to play pro in high level college is because from such a young age, they're playing up, they're playing competitive AU. So they just have so much exposure to their sport. So they develop that reactive pattern. That's more of like a brain neurology conversation. But when you add this component into it, you really see like who kind of has it. You know, I don't know how to label that, but like who has it and who doesn't, because you're adding constraints in that don't fit like the mold or the model, meaning like the technical aspect of sprinting, there is a technical aspect of it that you need to teach to make sure they do it safe. They get the most output. We get the benefits we're looking for. But if I say like, hey, you two kids, you're going to do a partner shadow drill and you have to cross him up and then sprint the first guy to get to 15 yards. It's like, this is just mano y mano. Like, we're going to pick random people putting together. Let's see what you got. And so that day is my favorite day because I think it really brings together, like, is our training working or is it not? Am I creating too much of a robot or am I not creating too much of a robot? And then we do a fun team competition at the end. We call it Jailhouse Friday. And that's just fun and meaning, like, you throw everything out the window that you know. And it's literally just like, all right, guys, we're going to compete today. Let's see what you got. And we just make up fun tests and we do stuff like that. And I think adding that in just does a whole host of things. But does that answer your question a little bit?
Yeah, no. And I think that kind of brings in the whole culture piece of what we do and having our own things that, you know, making up a Jailhouse Friday or whatever it is, you know, takes all, you know, every day it can get monotonous and a weight room is monotonous, you know, progressive overload is doing the same thing over and over and over again and, you know, breaking it down. And I think adding things like that is huge. And it's still, these are the things that like really get me going or keep me up at night is like, I have, even in my gym, I can get to the point where I'm just using random athlete. He's gotten stronger, gotten bigger, faster, can jump higher. In my gym, he competes. In my gym, right? He's hitting shots, he's dunking, when we're going live or whatever it is, and then still can't bring it, right? Because he's become comfortable. The guard has come down in my facility, right? And then the second he walks out, the second where he's going back to his high school coach, maybe he's insecure around his high school teammates, this and that. And he can't carry it to the, you know, where it really matters. And that's what I've been trying to figure out. Because we've got an eighth grade team we're coaching. We can't figure it out. Talk about being humbled. I thought I could take any team and, you know, bring them to a national championship, you know, and everybody, you know, it's not happening. We're 1-7. And we have great athletes. The kids are skilled. Not great. You know, we have good athletes. I think we're more athletic and more skilled than any team in our league. Mm-hmm. And to prove that, our only win is against the best team in the league. All right. And we beat them by 10. And we've lost. We're 1-7. That's true, right?
Yeah.
That's true, right? We have one win. It's against the number one team in the league. And we won by 10. And we lost 7 games. What do I know? And it's just one of these things that, like, I took on thinking we're going to go, you know, I'm going to motivate these guys. We're going to kill everybody. And no.
Back to the drawing board. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, you know, and something that we try to do with that, because you can't really control that, you know, necessarily.
I want to.
Yeah. I wish. Yeah. But like, is making kids uncomfortable in training, even in your facility, you know? So like, here's an example. Like if we have a pro crew and I have a kid that like, he's like the stud, like let's say you have an NBA guy and like, he pretty much knows everything and he's good. I'll put him against somebody that I know is better than him at a certain drill.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll have them compete and he just gets exposed. And he gets mad. And I want you to get mad. And I want you to get frustrated and try to do it while the other kid I'm gaining confidence. But then I might take that kid and put him against another kid that I know is not that good. Yeah. Just making them feel uncomfortable all the time, you know, is like, it shows you a lot. Like this is one thing I don't even know how to pinpoint. And I mean, in a sense you could, but like, that's why I love team competitions. People are like, you can't build toughness. I agree, but I also don't agree because I believe you can build habits and discipline that carry over into it, right? Like I'm not talking about the rah-rah toughness.
I think you can build a culture that demands toughness. Not every kid's going to fit into your culture, right? And this is, I think, what you're saying. We can create a culture that demands toughness, that makes these kids uncomfortable, that if somebody comes in and can get kind of swallowed into that culture, they're going to get tough. But a lot of kids might not make it in this culture.
100%. And that's why I love the team competition because, like, you see the kids that, like, when it gets hard, they push a little bit. And then you see kids, like, when it gets hard, they're like, yeah, I'm kind of done. I'm going to let up. But what that tells me in talking with like coaches and agents or whatever is like, hey, like during your team competition, I know you like player A, but player B's got a lot of grit. He finished the whole team competition. Like you might want to think about having him in the fourth quarter when you need somebody to lock somebody down. You know what I mean? Like little things like that, they reveal so much in terms of just that culture that we're talking about. And so that's why I love it because it shows me a lot on that day.
Yeah. I love how you talk about, you know, making your guys angry, right? And doing that. And it's sometimes I'm incredibly mean. I'll berate kids. I do, but it's not for the sake of being a bully. It's not for the sake of getting off on berating a child, right? It's, I want to see how he reacts, right? And it, I'm testing him, right? So I may have, it might be a high level, might be a low level. I don't care, right? I not that I treat everybody the same. Not everybody deserves to be treated the same, right? But when I'm doing that, it is to create a reaction, or it's for me to see the reaction and how they're going to withstand the pressure of life, of a coach screaming at them, at fans screaming at them, at whatever their goal is and where they want to go. They're going to be upfront with me and tell me when they walk into my gym, we do a whole goal setting thing, right? And they're going to tell me where they want to be. Now, I'm going to act accordingly to their goal, and I'm going to treat them according to their goal. So if they tell me they want to make the NBA, you better be ready, yeah, right? Don't tell me that, right? You might, or you want to play college basketball and you're a soft suburban white kid that, you know, is scared of his shadow. All right, we got a lot of work to do and you're not going to like it. It's going to be uncomfortable and I'm not going to stop. I remain constant, right? You told me this, this was your goal. You know, you can look at my track, and it's not look at my track record, look at the people I put. It's not like that. It's, I have a pretty good understanding of what it takes to get there because I've watched the process so many times. I've been a part of the process so many times that I know what I do works to some extent. Not that I know everything, not that I'm a genius, not that I'm, look at me. It's that I've done this enough, right? That trust me, this works.
Yeah. No, I think, and that's the thing, you know, just using your experience and using yourself as a, I don't like the word mentor, but like, it is true. I think the private sector is a little different in that aspect. And that's really what it comes down to. You know, like when you work in a pro and collegiate setting, no doubt, do you have a lot of say and control, and you build these relationships with people and help control things, but you're not the overarching presence. Because like, I've seen this multiple times working with coaches. Let's say you go to a school in the ACC and you're a strength coach and you're implementing the programming there. The head coach could literally walk down to the weight room session that you're doing and be like, hey, all of this, I don't like it. We need to change this. Let's talk about it. Like that. They have that power to do that. In the private sector, though, it is all on you. They come to you. They pay you, right? So they're not only paying you with time, they're paying you with money. And that goes back to, you know, full circle. And we said, like, the barrier to entry is so low. So what you're talking about is like being tough and holding these guys to a standard. It's because there is nobody else that's going to do that. You know, like if a kid goes to Duke and he misses a strength training session, but he's the best kid on the team, do you think the head coach really cares?
No.
No, he doesn't care. But if a kid in the off season is working with you and he misses a session, misses a week, that lack of accountability, I'm saying that if you didn't show, or that if you showed, is going to present itself in this kid over the course of his training and then even when he goes back to school. So the private sector is so different because like you literally control every variable in that process. And so I think that that's why we have to hold ourselves to a very high standard as coaches in the private sector.
Adam, going back to the training, and we talked about the majority of athletes, right? That those 9 out of 10 who maybe they're fighting for a varsity spot, maybe they're fighting for a, you know, Division 3 or Division 2 school. How do you balance, you talked about testing the speed, strength, and vertical. How do you balance that training? Like, where do you start with a kid as far as, do you work on a couple weeks of speed or is it, you know, GPP? And then how do you implement them together so that, like we talk about, like kids are playing, you know, 100 basketball games a season. How do you keep them prepared without dropping off in, you know, strength or speed?
Yeah, I think something, you know, that we do here a lot of, as you guys have probably seen, is we run what's called 13-week blocks and they're open enrollment. And 52 weeks in the year, 13 weeks, right? So you have a preseason, in-season, postseason, off-season. In those 13-week blocks, we've created kind of the confines of like building this athlete. And I know people always say like, well, you can't necessarily do that because there's so many different variables. Yeah, I agree. But back to the private sector, if you're just kind of all over the place and there's no schedule, meaning like, hey, you're going to come 3 times a week, we're going to progress here, then your results are going to show for it. So in those 13-week blocks, something that we do, and every athlete goes through, whether you're a junior, a high school, a college, or a pro, it doesn't matter. Obviously, the training varies, but the model and the principle remains the same. So the first 2 weeks, there's like an acclimation this is just our coaching staff, just seeing like, what do we have? Okay, this kid moves like this. We do very basic things. We do a big warm up. We do some aerobic work, basic strength training, basic speed and jumping. There's no coaching in the first week or two. So they're just like, hey, here's what we're going to do. Unless you see something ridiculous, like a kid's going to do something that's going to get himself hurt or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're taking a lot of notes. Week three, then we do all of our testing. It's a whole week. So we do like our movement assessments, our speed, our strength, and our power and conditioning tests. Those are their metrics. We kind of create report cards for these kids to give back to their parents and stuff like that. Then the next 4 to 6 weeks are what's called their developmental phase. So this is then where we're pushing the envelope with strength. We're doing a lot of acceleration work. A lot of our principles work along kind of like chasing speed, because I think speed just elicits so many things. Talk about the biggest bang for your buck. It's like in skill training, right? Like, Bobby, what do you think like the three main things are in skill training that you're non-negotiables? Like, you could do the other drills, but like, what's going to get you to the top in skill training? Like, what would you say are the three things you need to do all the time?
Dribble, shoot, finish.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So like getting amazing at those things, like shooting, making 100 shots off the catch, off the rip, whatever, yeah, you need to be really good at that.
But again, dribbling slow doesn't work. Finishing slow doesn't work. And shooting slow doesn't work.
Exactly.
Again, skill trainers that have no background in actual performance get so focused on the dribble, the finish, and then you get the kid focused on making or whatever it is. And we take, if you don't have that speed quality, and I think you were going to get to this, but if we don't have the speed quality, none of it matters.
Exactly. So we prioritize speed, right? And this is a whole other conversation, but just how speed works in terms of the force velocity, right? Earlier acceleration, longer ground contact time, more force. As you get to top speed, more max velocity, less ground contact time, et cetera. Our goal is to get every single athlete that walks in our doors to improve those three tests, right? 10 yards, 15 yard sprint, split, 30 yard split, and then our vert. So those first 4 to 6 weeks are about developing the strength and the force. And we balance it out. We undulate, but whatever. Then the next 7 to 9 weeks is about getting them to that top speed, running faster, improving that reactive, adding more live components in their drills of strength training. The strength training then kind of goes down a little bit because the volume of the other stuff is going up. And then depending on how many games they're playing in skill sessions, we regulate volume. Because you might have, let's say I have 30 basketball players, right, in like 20 in one session. All 20 aren't just going to do the same volume. We organize them into groups based upon how many skill sessions and volumes and limitations and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Then those last 10 to 11 weeks is where we really push for like that top speed. We really push for all that reactive stuff. And in terms of like true ballistic movement with the vertical jump, this is where we do on to Jailhouse Friday, all of our live change of directions and like free constraint drills. Then we retest in week 12. So we see like, okay, we tested in week 3, we tested in week 12. Did they get better? Here's how they improved upon those 5 tests that we talked about. Perfect. And then something that we do that's fun is week 13 before we head into a new block. So if they continue to train, we restart based upon the qualities that they built. Something that we do, though, which is fun, is we call it a hell week. And week 13 is just like, you don't even know what's happening. We're going to come in. You might do a team competition one day. You might do a push-up challenge one day. We're just rattling their cages because you just went through really good training. You improved. Now let's have some fun. And so every kid, no matter if you're like a junior, a high school, a college, or a pro, you're still going to go through that format. But then it's your job as a coach to know like, hey, one block could be really boring because I just have juniors. So we're just going to work on the basics. College, they might need a little bit more. Pro, a little bit more. And so forth and so on. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sitting here and I love it. I absolutely love it. I just don't. Like, I'm thinking of my kids, they're going to come off the season. They're going to go to AAU. They got an idiot coach here. They got another idiot coach here, this guy. And like, I'm just trying to think if it would like, I don't do as much pro. I used to, when I like, you talked to me 3 years ago, I had the cycles. I had them, right. We're going through this. It's going to happen. And I don't know if it's just something I'm going through now where I've kind of got away with it. I've gotten real big into it. It's what I'm into now, but 1x20. And I just, I do test things, right? I am testing vertical jump. I am testing their speed. I am testing this stuff. And I'm seeing similar improvements to when I stressed, you know, getting a kid in 3 times a week and he missed this workout or whatever. Just by hitting all the different movements, just by, you know, getting them close to failure, experiencing that. And I think their training age is so young that I'm not going to say it doesn't matter what you do with them, right? Like you said, we can take all the different programming, all the different modalities. And, you know, for the these kids, they get better. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. The thing is, though, too, why we do this, and this is a little bit deeper, is that training model aligns with our business model as well. And the volume of kids that we see, that's what works best. But what's really cool is, like, for our coaches, hey, work within the system. So, like you're saying, like with a 1x20 or whatever, like, method you want, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter as long as they're just coming in and we know, like, okay, what days is he coming in? Oh, this kid can only come in on Mondays. No problem. So we'll modify for him. Right. Or this kid coming in three times a week. Perfect. He's going to go through everything business as usual. Oh, this kid has 10 million AU things a week. Okay. We're going to regress in volume a little bit. We're just going to focus on these things.
Yeah.
I think, though, the ultimate test of a coach, not really a coach, I would say like a coach and their business and training model, is it's not about the mode or the modality, because there's all roads lead, you know, I said it before, all roads lead to Rome, but it's about how well can you execute within the confines of your system, because that's going to allow you to handle more kids, more volume, so forth and so on. But that's probably another conversation.
Yeah. So I'm generally training when I'm talking to strength, we're generally training, I don't know, between three, most six kids at a time. Right. And that we're talking about fitting with my model. None of my basketball, there's maybe a couple freaks, you know, that you got 10%, 5% of my kids enjoy lifting, right? You know, the 80%, or maybe if it's 20%, 80% of these kids don't really want to lift, or if they do, they want to do bicep curls, right? And that allows me to get these kids in, and I can finish that 1x20 in 20, 30 minutes. And that, let's say it's an hour session. That allows another 30 minutes for individualizing, I don't know if you want to call it corrective work or whatever this kid has, whatever issue. And that allows me to almost program and use that other 30 minutes. You have a Jailhouse Friday. I try to incorporate stuff like that almost every session. Maybe for these basketball players, have them throw a football around, have them kick a soccer ball, have them do cartwheels, have them walk on a balance beam. Just do different things that add a sense of play. Right. Where now they can kind of muscle through that 20, 30 minute strength session. And I think they're going to get stronger. We talked about that first up in this podcast. We talked about it's pretty easy to get people stronger. Progressive overload. Right. Yeah. As the weight goes up. Right. You're going to get stronger. So I can use that kind of boring, hey, just get through this. Give me 20, 30 minutes of doing what you don't want to do. And then the other 30 minutes that we can work on things like flow. Right. Let's try to get them into flow. Let's try to get them, you know, present. And it seems to be working.
No. And again, though, that fits with what you're doing in your model, right? Because, like, if you have kids that don't like to lift and then you continuously just make them lift, well, then you're not really helping them.
Yeah.
You're
I'm saying they don't like to lift, that you wouldn't know that if you walked into my gym, right? They like what we do, right? They're there. But I think coming in, you know, I don't know. There's not many basketball players that walk in the door enjoying strength training. I think they enjoy strength training with us. Because they know it's 20, 30 minutes, get it done. And then we're, you know,
and it's the environment, but like, it's also the environment that you created too, you know? So like that culture that we talked about is they like that. They like being there with you, you know? And so that's the thing, though, it's meeting that athlete where they are and what they need. Like, here's an example, though. If you had a kid that was a junior and he was a really good basketball player and he was getting recruited by some good schools, let's say some like mid-major D1 schools or even lower, but like, you knew he needed to get stronger. Or like, he was just really weak for his age. Let's say he had like a 6'3", 6'4" guard, but he could only bench like 100 pounds. And you're like, hey, look, when you go to college, the program is going to be a little bit more demanding. We're going to have to change things a little bit because it's in your best interest that you're prepared for when you head into school. That's a different conversation than being like, hey, when you come in here, everybody lifts. Like, we do it like this. Kids are like, okay, no, I don't do that. You know, like Lou Williams is like notorious and Allen Iverson. They're like, yeah, I don't lift. It's like, all right, let's have a good day.
Yeah.
But like, I look at it like what we talked about earlier is like the interest of the kids. Like, let's say you're going to Duke. I know the strength and conditioning of Duke. They have a pretty rigorous strength training program. If I don't prepare my kid for that program, then shame on me, because it's like, he'd be like, well, where'd you come from? Like, you can't even do this. You can't even do that. Right. And it's like, oh, I came from Varsity House. And you'd be like, okay, well, you're not going back there in the off season. It's like, okay. You know what I mean? So like, it's not about imposing your will, like you're saying, right. It's about eliciting the culture and making sure that you're getting the job done. And then when the time needs it, or if it's preparing them for that next endeavor, then I think that that's when that would come into play.
Right. And let's say you get the kid in ninth grade and he goes, I want to go to Duke. Right. Well, you know what? I know what Duke does. We got a lot of work to do. You know, you just, you like the athlete told you that the kid said, I want to go to, and I'll look, you really want to go to Duke? Yeah, I really want to go to Duke. Are you sure? Because things are about to get a little crazy if you want to go to Duke, because you know, maybe they are on that path and maybe they're nowhere near it. And I'll never, even if the kid stunk, right? You know, I'd make a joke, maybe, you know, make light of it. If the kid was no good, had no chance of going to Duke, he goes, my goal is going to get Duke. I'm going to treat you accordingly. You know, you might change that goal in 2 weeks.
Right.
But that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, no. Adam, I want to go back for a second. With your 13-week blocks, do you, just from a business standpoint, do you get kids to sign up and commit for the 13 weeks? And then I was also curious, like, what happens when either a kid gets injured or, you know, has to take 2 weeks off, whatever it is? How does that, how do you adapt to something like that if they're 8 weeks into the first block?
Yeah, for sure. So we used to have them prepay. You know, I created the four 13-week blocks here at Varsity House. We used to do it like a little different way. We still had open enrollment, but like that block structure. What we used to do is, like you said, we'd have those kids pay up front for the year. And so, you know, this is obviously business tactics, I guess, but we used to have those kids pay up front for the year. And the issue with that, though, is like it pigeonholes us as a coach in a business, because it was like, all right, well, let's say like you miss, or let's say you can't come in. Well, like we owe you those training sessions because you just paid all that money up front for 13 weeks. Like, how can I fit you in? And then, you know, this kind of comes down to like that coach owner paradox. You know, Bobby, we've talked about that. We're like, on a Sunday at 3, you might have to go into the gym to accommodate for 10 kids that missed their session because they prepaid and their parents are like, hey, are they going to get to make this up? So what we switched to, though, is now we do like a monthly payment. So the way that we advertise is like, hey, look, it's going to be a 13-week training program, but you're just going to pay monthly. Now, here's why that's great. Like you're talking about, at any point, a kid can just pause. And then if he misses a week, misses 2 weeks or what have you, then it's no time loss and no money loss. But if he comes back, then we just renew your membership. We prorate your price or so forth and so on. But here, talk about culture and buy-in, right? I love the 13 weeks. One, because it works within the model. Sure, testing, all that. But from a kid's perspective, in a parent's perspective, in a coach even's perspective, it's assuring commitment. Like you're ensuring like, hey, we're going to get you better because you got to commit to at least 13 weeks of training. And it's not going to go like perfectly. You're not going to make them, you know, like talk about robotic. But like as a parent, I'm thinking like objectively, I'd be like, wow, this is really cool. Like, no problem. My son will be here. I see that you're going to be committed. You're going to work with him for the 13 weeks. Those 13 weeks go by. The kid could be like, mom, dad, it was amazing. We had such a great time here. I got a report card. We put it on our refrigerator, all those little things. Oh, I can't wait. We got to sign you back up again. And from both a training perspective, it's better for results, because who's going to see results in like a week or 3 weeks? You're going to see results in 13 weeks. But also from a continuity standpoint and a buy-in standpoint and culture standpoint, we get kids who just train with us year round now indefinitely, you know, and sometimes they go in season. Well, we have an alternative for that, but does that answer your question, Alex?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also wanted to ask, I already forgot the name that you mentioned, but you do some consulting with other coaches and trainers.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, our company Business of Strength is a high level consulting. It's Joe, Dan, myself. And then we have a team part of that company where we help other coaches, trainers, and business owners. If you own a gym or not, we've been very, very fortunate. We've helped coaches from around the world. And basically we just come in and help build your training models and help build your systems, but also help build your people and your business. Mm-hmm. So we just come in, we do, you know, everything from laying the foundation of your people, accountability, your core values, even your finances. And then we go all the way into your training product, delivering your service, and how can you make that all run together? And it's awesome. You know, we've had a lot of cool opportunities, you know, with that. That company's only growing, and it's really cool, because what happens is like, it's so hands-on that their problems and their business almost begin to become yours. And so you really care about it. And I wouldn't want it any other way, right? It's not like a online membership and it's like, hey man, pay my online membership. You never hear from me again. It's like, I have coaches that like, literally like last night, I could go through my text feed at 3 a.m. be like, hey, like, what should we do about this? This problem happened or this system happened. And it's like, of course, I'm not going to answer you at 3 a.m. But like, all right, man, let's schedule a call. Let's make sure we get this done. But like, let's work through this. Let's help you through this. And it's very rewarding. It's just like coaching a person, an athlete. How many texts have you guys gotten from athletes in the wee hours of the night or random times be like, hey, Bobby, like what you're doing has really made a difference in my life. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more rewarding than that. And that's kind of the ethos, if you will, of that business.
Yeah. Any young trainer that talks to me, you know, how'd you get to where you're at or, you know, how'd you get this level? It was a combination of reading training literature, right? Studying, getting certifications, doing all that, caring, and then actually learning how to run a business. Because if I don't have that piece, if I don't understand the business side of things, right, I'll be broke, I'll be hungry, I'll be disorganized, I won't sleep at night, and then I'm not going to be there when I do show up. And that balance is incredibly important. And I think a lot of young people come in and they see me bouncing a ball around in the gym or, you know, having kids lift like it just happened. Right. But there are systems upon systems and there are years of learning, years of messing up. And I didn't use years personally, but I was part of a business mentorship group for 2 years and I spent thousands and thousands of dollars to learn about people that ran gyms. Right. We didn't talk training. We didn't talk, you know, vertical jumps. We talked business. And in the spirit of effortless athlete, right? If I don't have that side moving effortlessly, if I don't have the business back end showing up, every trainer that works for me, every intern that's there, everything we have in a systematic type of process, right? Everything crumbles and you need both. And I think that's awesome that you're doing that and you're helping aspiring trainers. I think anybody listening to this, I see what you put out there and I see the level of, you know, integrity that you work with and the amount of effort that you put into creating an effortless product, maybe. Is amazing. I think we can end on that. And if you're working on anything cool, new, exciting, which I know you are, and hopefully one day we can get back to what we were working on. Right. Because I think about that all the time. We won't drop that here, but there was definitely something there and I'm confident we'll work in the future, but where can people find you and let us know whatever you want.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I appreciate the kind words, guys. You know, I think that that is really it. You know, you're told when you're younger, it's like, hey, just become the smartest person in the room. And that really doesn't lead anywhere. You know, very seldom is it like that going to just take you straight to the top. And even if it does, right, if you don't have the foundation, like you're talking about, things become a mess. Like, think about this, like, Bobby, imagine, like, I'm going to make something up, but like, imagine 10 years ago, the systems and stuff that you had in place, if you were the smartest person in the room, but I gave you 100 athletes to work with, you'd be like, how do I even do this? You know, and the same thing here with us, like that's how we did this. Cause we made so many mistakes. It's like more is not better if it's on a broken foundation.
Right.
So that was really important, but yeah. So you guys can find me at Adam Menner on Instagram. I'm there. And then if you guys would like, you can visit www.businessofstrength.com. We have all of our information there. You guys can go and check that out. You know, we'd be awesome, you know, to talk with you guys. And if you guys need any help, who's listening? So,
all right.
Thanks awesome. A lot, Adam.
Yeah,
thanks for coming on.
Stay on for a second. We'll end the recording.
Yeah, no problem.